on tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Ryan.
Ryan.
Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's go. See you on the other side.
The Creator Spiritus Mentis Domus Vita in Deus Omnia.
So if everybody wants to follow along in the fog light prayer, if you don't know it, some of you have cards in front of you with it on it. If not, it's right up here as well. So God,
let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, safe and die, can find your love through me.
There is a solution. From the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Peg to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hi, everybody. My name is Peg, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they may acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of this difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members will find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 567, 568.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode or just turn them off. So we have Tom here tonight for his seventh installment of this series. This is actually my last night doing this, so I just want to, it's been a privilege to come up and do this and introduce Tom to you guys. And something that I've learned from him these past couple weeks is I've really started to become more aware of the presence of God in the people around me. I just pray tonight that we could just keep our hearts and our minds open so that we can hear what God has to say through Tom. So let's bring Tom up.
How's everybody tonight?
Good.
Good?
Good.
My name's Tom and I'm an alcoholic. So, what are we going to talk about? I never know what the heck I'm going to talk about. I know a little bit. I got to stop lying, you know. That's what they told me when I got here, you know. I used to have a mentor named Dennis. He looked me in the eye and he said, "Tom, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. And I never met another alcoholic who wasn't." And the first thing I thought was, is he talking about me? He better not be talking about me. Because I'm not a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I'm just a nice guy who's been messed over. You know, I've been messed over by God and by the clergy and by the army and by society and by all the people I ever knew my whole life. Everybody's messed me over. So, you know, I'm just trying to get by. I'm not a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Oh, and then I met a man who told me, when I was talking to him about things like that, about the way I felt, about people telling me those kinds of things about me. And he said, "You know what, Tom, you need to get rid of your victim story. You don't stand much of a chance of changing until you get rid of your victim story." So how many people in here enjoy suffering? What? You don't? Are you sure? Am I in an AA meeting? Huh? Because, apparently I must have enjoyed suffering for a long time. Because I sure have done enough of it. See, that's the unfortunate thing about my alcoholism is I've never changed out of virtue. I've only changed out of pain. The pain of my alcoholism is what got me sober. If I hadn't have been through that pain from that alcoholism, why would I be here? I mean, did you show up here tonight because you thought that we might be having more fun here than you're having down at the bar where you used to drink? Or maybe you stopped having fun. Because it stopped being fun for me a long time ago. When I didn't know a lot about how to live. And I didn't know that, because at the age of 13, I put a drink in me. And, at the age of 15, I started putting drugs in me. And, I didn't stop doing that until I was 31. And so I never grew up. My growth was stunted. And I never grew up. When I finally got ready to get serious about getting sober at 31, I was a grown man. That was really a child. A preteen almost. That's why we talked about last week when we talked about the sixth step. This separates the men from the boys, right? Yeah. And I always like to say, and the girls from the women. So, the boys are the guys that, I have a guy, that I sponsored for a long time. And he just, I sponsor guys. So, guys get sober, and then what's the next problem they got? Girls! How is it that it seems like that's the way it seems to go in that sequence, okay? And they don't have a problem with drugs and alcohol anymore, but now they got a problem with women. Women who just won't do what they want them to do. I had that problem. I had a big problem with that. When we get further on the steps, I'll share more about that, And I had this one guy, he continues to, do these things. And I tell him, listen, you need to do this. Yeah, but you don't understand. See? Yeah, but. But, I'm just trying to, help you out. Here's some things that I had to do. Try doing that. Okay. And then the next one will come along. And the same thing will happen again. And I will say, well, did you do what I told you? How come you didn't do it? Well, yeah, I ordered that book you told me about, but, I don't know what happened to it. It's kind of like, where'd the big book go? It's under my bed, maybe. So you see, when I'm talking, and when I was told about what separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women, the men are the ones who are willing to do what they're told in AA. They don't have a bunch of excuses. And neither do the girls that become women. They pull their big girl panties on. And they follow the suggestion of somebody who has suffered already. And I have suffered plenty. Now, I know you're going to need to suffer. That comes with the territory. I'm sorry. It just does. I like a line in the 12 and 12, in step 7. It says, "Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing." Yeah. It's like I'm in the central house one day. I love this sign behind me here, because first time I saw it, I says, I got to tell Mike this story. I told this story the last time I was doing a step series. So, I'm a few years sober, and I'm working through the steps, and I'm what you call full of myself. Okay? I'm really, I've been on this pink cloud, and I'm feeling all this spirituality. I'm really spiritually fit, and I can feel it, how spiritually fit I am. I'm just feeling great. This AA's great, and I got a pretty girlfriend, and I got a good job, and everything's going my way. This woman comes up to me in the central house. This is years ago. It was in the American Legion in Delray Beach. And she tells me, she goes, "God told me to give you this book because you're going to help so many people." And man, I thought, yeah, my head just was throbbing like that. Yeah. That's right. So my old sponsor, he's a great guy. We'd go to Denny's, we'd eat after meetings, and we're sitting in Denny's, and I told him, I said, "Dennis," I said, "you're never going to believe this." I said, "This woman came up to me in Central House, and she gave me a book because... she said that book is going to help me because I'm going to help so many people, that God told her to give me that book." Dennis said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah," he said, "and the name of the book is A Course in Miracles." I said, "Well, how'd you know that?" And he said, "Well, she told me the same thing." You see, I need right-sizing, all right? I don't know about you. But like we talked about in previous steps, through inventory, I understand what my problem is. I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. My three main defects of character are self-condemnation, false pride to make up for it, and a cop to resentment over everything. Okay, so, basically, that's my alcoholic character. And that's what motivates my alcoholic character. I got a self-image problem. So I always want to portray, and make people, you got to like me. You got to be happy with me. Because if I can't get you to feel good about me, I guess I can't feel good about myself. That's what the defect of character causes. And so, because of that, I'm full of unhealthy dependencies. But the boys don't want to hear that as an answer. They don't want to be told that. They want to think, listen, all I need is to get my shit together. Get me a good-looking woman, plenty of money in my pocket, nice place to live, go to the gym and get myself all pumped up, looking right, looking tough, That's who I thought I was when I came here. I was a lot better looking in those days. I was a lot younger. I had arms like that. That same man, Dennis, told me one time, he said, "You know what, Tom?" He says, "You think you're a tough guy, don't you?" I said, "Yeah. I can kick some ass." He said, "Well, I'll tell you who a tough guy is, Tom. Jesus Christ was a tough guy. Because he could take whatever you threw at him and love you anyway. That's a pretty tough guy. You think you can do that?" God puts people in your life for a reason. God put that man in my life because he knew how to right-size me. And I need plenty of right-sizing. Because this alcoholism causes me to live in a delusion. I live in a false world. A world that I create that's full of lies. I've lied to myself my whole life. Told myself all kinds of things. You know, used to be really crazy. You know, I don't know if I told the story about how when I was in the veterans hospital and you know, we had therapeutic community, and there was a man who came in there, and everybody shared every morning in that therapy. And I knew so much about AA because, after all, I've been going in and out of AA for years. I knew so much, they made me the president of the community. And this man come in there and sit in the back of the room with a notebook, and he wasn't sharing. He was just writing stuff in that notebook. And I started focusing on him. What's he writing in that notebook? He's probably writing stuff about me in that notebook. Who the hell is that guy? Okay? That's how crazy I was. And over a period of a few weeks, I hated that man and never opened his mouth. I never even talked to him. That's the insanity of alcoholism. That's why the character needs so much work. And I didn't want AA to be about building my character. I didn't want AA to be about character building. You know, that's not what I wanted. You know, why didn't I want that? I'll tell you what, the answer's right there. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. That's right. It didn't appeal to me. I like the easier, softer way. You know? Where's the quick course in Alcoholics Anonymous? Give me the quick answer, you know? I want to feel good right now. Hey? He says, "You know what, Tom? I understand," he says, "you've been getting all this spirituality and you want to be enlightened." I said, "That's right. I like that. I want to be enlightened. I want to transcend. You know? I want to get to that place." And he said, "Well," he says, "I understand that," he said, "because I was just like you, Tom. Just like you." He said, "I was several years sober when I was like you." He said, "And I had been studying all kinds of Eastern religions and Buddhism and Confucianism and all kinds of isms, Hinduisms." And he says, "And you know," he said, "and me and a buddy of mine," he said, we were really into it. We were going to different meetings all around Chicago, just back in Chicago." He says, "And you know, Dennis," and my buddy told me, he said, "Dennis," he says, "you know," he says, "I'm part Chippewa Indian." And my great-grandmother is full-blooded Chippewa Indian. She's 105 years old up on the reservation in Wisconsin. And they have big powwows. She's like the sage of the tribe. And they have big powwows up there. And we should go up there to one of them powwows. So they went up to the Indian reservation, and they got the fire going around there, and they're sitting around the fire, and they bring the old lady out. The old lady sits down, and she looked right at me. Dennis is telling me this story. She looked right at me, and she said, "Son, I can tell that you have a question. What's your question? What is it that you're interested in knowing?" And he said, "Oh, ma'am," he says, "we're interested in knowing about enlightenment. We want to be enlightened." And she said, "Ah, yes," she said, "enlightenment. Before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water." You see, Tom, you're never going to be some guru sitting on the side of the mountain where life don't touch you. And you think that you're going to escape from your feelings. Because that's what this is about. This is about my feelings. You're not going to escape from that. You're a human being. And you're always going to have to deal with life and deal with people. And you need to learn how to do that. You need to learn how to have relationships with the rest of mankind. Because, see, I was very lacking in knowing how to have true, meaningful relationships with another human being. But he said, "It's okay. Because God is going to speak to you through the mouths of the people in AA. All you have to do is learn how to listen. He'll speak to you. The truth. The truth is what humility is all about. The seventh step in 12 and 12 is an essay on humility, really, is what it is. An essay on humility, on how important humility is. It's unfortunate that it takes humiliation to get me humble. You know, I always tell my guys that I sponsor, you know, there's a big difference between humiliation and humility, see. Humiliation is like I'm sitting in the Emporium Bar up in Peoria Heights across the street from the Pabst Brewery. And the woman who's the bartender is about a 220-pound bull dyke. And she's one tough lady, okay? And she tells me, "If your head hits that bar one more time, you're out of here." And the next thing I know, the bar stool's being kicked out from under me, and I hit the barroom floor, and she proceeds to stomp on me. And I'm trying to crawl to get out, you know. But I can't get up because this 220-pound bull dyke is stomping on me as I'm trying to crawl on the barroom floor, a nasty barroom floor with swill on it, you know. It's not a nice place. I didn't drink in nice places, okay? I'm strictly a low-bottom drunk. And they even held the door open for her while she continued to stomp on me as I went down the little few steps into the slushy, dirty sidewalk, and finally I made it to the slushy, nasty gutter where she finished stomping on me and said, don't come back in here because that's where you belong. Now that's humiliation. That's what you call humiliation. And by my own hand, I suffered plenty of humiliation. That's the pain of my alcoholism. The pain of my alcoholism humiliated the crap out of me. So what do you want to keep suffering for? Because God loves you. I know what my God's will is for me. Just like I know what his will is for you. He wants you to be happy, joyous, and free. He doesn't want me to have to suffer. He hasn't made me suffer. I made myself suffer. I wanted to blame him for my suffering. After all, I had to blame somebody. I didn't want to take responsibility. I wanted to have the V continue to be tattooed on my forehead for victim. I wanted you to see that big V. But you don't understand. You don't get it, see? I'm different. I got other problems. You know, I've said this before, and I'll continue to say it. I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. That's my natural way of thinking. Alcoholism causes that. And it took a while for me to start to understand. I used to have a sponsor, you know. I used to go to this guy all the time. He was a tough guy. You know, I always seem to pick these guys who really know how to just, you know. Why is that? I'll tell you why that is. Because I don't remember nobody that ever felt sorry for me. But I remember every man in this program that kicked my ass. That didn't give a damn whether I liked it or not. That told me the truth. Because they weren't afraid of telling the truth to me. They didn't need me to like them. Now, I don't need you to like me. I like me. See, what I had to learn was that I'm responsible for the way I feel, not you. And I'm not responsible for the way you feel. You are. What I'm responsible for is to do the right thing. And if what I'm doing is lying, cheating, stealing, controlling, manipulating, and letting all my defects of character cause me to live in my shortcomings, the shortcomings that all of mankind has. They like to call them the seven deadly sins. And pride leads the pack. Pride goeth before the fall. We're going to talk about the fall, you know. Pride, envy, lust, jealousy, gluttony, sloth, and anger. My favorite one. Love that anger, man. Makes you feel so powerful, you know. Remember being in a meeting years ago and in a candlelight meeting, and a man in the meeting said, you know, today I cannot afford to feel justifiable anger. And I thought, What is he, a sissy or something? What's his problem? Well, you telling me, you know, that I don't got the right to come after you? You know, because see, that's, I come from that. What I come from is, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you worse. One of the first things I had to learn to do was be a citizen. I didn't even know how to be a citizen. Because all my life I was an outlaw. I had a girlfriend. And she lived in a trailer park. And I come to her place. She had all these bushes all grown up around her place. And they were all nice and trimmed and cut real nice, right below the windowsill. And I said, "Who trimmed all the bushes?" And she said, "Oh, you know that nice boy who, from down the street, who cuts my grass, his father trimmed all the bushes down." I said, "Really?" I said, "What'd he charge you?" "Oh, he did it for free." I said, "Wait a minute now. Nobody does nothing for free. There's got to be a catch to this somewhere." My sponsor came over to pick me up, take me to a meeting. It's a good thing my sponsor was with me, because as we got back from the meeting, she was in hysterics on the phone to the sheriff's deputy. Because the father had been peeping. That's why the bushes were cut. And then had started beating on the door, trying to get inside. Well, you know, I was out that door, on my way down the street, to pull that man out of that trailer and do what I do. My sponsor tackled me in the middle of the street, held me down, and yelled in my face, "You got to learn to be a citizen, Tom. You're going to let the cops handle this." You know how foreign that was to a guy like me? Let the cops handle something? I never let the cops handle nothing. I handled everything. I handled it. Me. I had the sponsor at the same time, you know, around that time. Every time I would go to him and complain about what was going on, he would tell me the same thing. He'd say, "Well, Tom," he'd say, "it's just God working to build your character." That's not what I wanted to hear. "Wait a minute, don't you understand that I'm going through this, I'm going through that?" "Yeah, I understand you're going through that. And that's just God working to build your character." That's why I like Why We Were Chosen. If you ever read Why We Were Chosen, it talks in there about the rungs on the rungs on the ladder. Adversity are the rungs on the ladder which we must climb to spiritual perfection. So, that's how my character changes. By me staying sober and by dealing with it. By dealing with it. There's a lot that we can learn of how to do things. You know, I don't know the answers, but I know where to find them. This is Emmett Fox. This is called The Sermon on the Mount. And when I was getting sober, everybody had to read this. This is what we read. Along with the big book. First you study the big book, and then the 12 and 12. Then lots of literature. So if you want to change your character, there's a solution. You don't just have to keep on suffering. You don't have to keep on suffering. You can learn to practice virtue. You can start out simple. Stop lying, cheating, and stealing. You start to change pretty quick. You know, I started realizing after I was sober a couple of years, I didn't like myself so much. I started looking at myself after a couple of years sober, working on the steps, and thinking, you know, I'm not a very nice guy. My second year anniversary, a guy gave me a present. It was a ball cap. And I opened it up, you know, it was wrapped in paper. He said, here's a present for you for your second anniversary. I opened up the front of it. As soon as I tore it open, you could see the front. And the front of the ball cap said, a legend in my own mind. He said, you need to start wearing that, Tom. Because that's what I was. I was a legend in my own mind. You know, this is a lifelong thing. The steps are meant to be put into application in my life. They are the principles of AA. The steps are. Not some gimmicky words that are written up on the wall somewhere that somebody came up with. But the steps themselves are the philosophy for a way of life. The seventh step teaches me, you know, that I need to work on my character. If I want God to remove my shortcomings, what did it say in the sixth step? That it said that God has not seen fit to render us white as snow without our cooperation. That's instruction right there. That's an instruction that tells me you need to cooperate with God. You want your character to change. You want to get rid of your shortcomings. Then you need to cooperate with God. You need to live right. And then what you start to find out is you start to find out, you know what? What a jerk I've been. Because, you know, you might as well stop searching for happiness. Because happiness can't be found. You need to search for the right way to live. Because happiness is a byproduct of living right. It's a natural thing. It doesn't come from drugs and alcohol or people, places, and things. It's a natural way of being happy just because I live right. I don't jerk people around anymore. I don't lie, cheat, steal, control, manipulate. They called it on the mount the pure of heart. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. We live in God's world, but we do not in the least know it as it is. Heaven lies all about us. It is not a distant locality, afar off in the skies, but all around us now. But because we are lacking in spiritual perception, we are unable to recognize it. That is to say, we are unable to experience it. And therefore, so far as we are concerned, we may be said to be shut out of heaven. We do not contact a very tiny fragment of it. And that tiny fragment we call the universe. But even that little bit we see, for the most part, all awry. Heaven is the religious name for the presence of God. Heaven is infinite, but our mental habit leads us to mold our experience into three dimensions only. Our mental habit leads us into three dimensions only. There's a conversation about dimensions in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there is a solution. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those things in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. Where do you think Bill got that? Where do you think Bill got that? This is Bill's sponsor. Okay? That's where Bill got that. He got it right from Emmett Fox, who was a preacher. He believed in scientific prayer. And anybody tonight that's having a problem with thought, obsession, anything that you can't get rid of, you come and see me after this meeting. And I'm going to give you something that'll cure that. It'll take it out of your mind. Or you can just go to the internet and look it up yourself. It's called The Golden Key by Emmett Fox. And it's a very simple thing through prayer that you can get rid of any trouble that's in your mind. Heaven is eternity, but what we know here, we know only serially in a sequence called time, which never permits our comprehending an experience in its entirety. God is divine mind, and in that mind, there are no limitations or restrictions at all. Yet we see everything distributed in what we call space, or spaced out. I was spaced out for a long time. An artificial restriction which continuously inhibits the constant regrouping of our experience that is required by our creative thought. Heaven is the realm of spirit, substance, without age or discord or decay, a realm of internal good. And yet, to our distorted vision, everything is aging, decaying, wearing out, getting born only to die, blossoming only to fade. We are very much in the position of a colorblind man in a beautiful flower garden. All around him are glorious colors, but he is quite unaware of them and sees only blacks, whites, and grays. If we suppose him to be also devoid of the sense of smell, we shall see what a very small part of the glory of that garden exists for him. Yet it is all there, if he could only but sense it. This limitation in us is known in theology as the fall of man. And it arises from our using our free will in opposition to the will of God. God wants you to be happy, joyous, and free. And he has tried through our conscience to tell us how to do that. We all got a good wolf and a bad wolf. And which wolf you feed is going to be the one that's going to get strong. God has made man upright, but he has sought out many, many inventions. Our task is to surmount these limitations as rapidly as may be until we reach the point where we can know things as they really are. Experience heaven as it really is. That is what is meant by seeing God and seeing him face to face. To see God is to apprehend truth as it really is. And this is infinite freedom and perfect bliss. In this wonderful beatitude, we are told exactly how this supreme task is to be accomplished and who they are who shall do it. They are the pure in heart. Again, we have to understand that here the words pure and purity must be taken in a very much wider sense than that which is commonly allotted to them. Purity in the Bible means a very great deal more than physical purity. Vitally important thought, that is. In its full and complete sense, purity is recognizing God alone as the only real cause God alone as the only real cause and the only real power in existence. It is what is called elsewhere in the sermon the single eye. It is the master key to life. It is nothing less than the secret of escape from all sickness, trouble, and limitation, the overcoming or reversing, in short, of the fall of man. And so our text might well be paraphrased something in this style. Blessed are they who recognize God as the only real cause, and the only real presence, and the only real power, not merely in a theatrical or formal way, but practically and specifically and wholeheartedly in all thoughts and words and actions, and not merely in some parts of their lives, but in every nook and corner of their lives and mentalities, keeping nothing back from him, but bringing their own wills in every last particular into perfect harmony with his will. For they shall overcome all limitation of time and space and matter and carnal mind, and realize and enjoy the presence of God forever. By aligning my will with God's will. God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. God gives me a way to live right. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. These old ways are the ways that always worked. But we think in the material world. We want to live just in those three dimensions. That's where our mind wants to be. But if you want to be rocketed to the fourth dimension and find true happiness, then you will learn what the single eye is all about. Father John Doe knew that. And he knew where to find humility. And I'll end with him, like I like to. This is in Sobriety and Beyond on page 105, Humility Through Love. We do not believe that we can ever discuss humility too often. We are positive we can never acquire too much true humility. So in the discussion on charity or love, it is significant to note that true humility only comes through true love. Confidence and humility always go together, and confidence is begotten only of love. We shall place complete confidence only in one we love. One of the reasons why men are so anxious to exalt themselves, to overestimate their own value and their own powers, to resent anything that would tend to lower themselves in their own esteem or in that of others, is because they see no other hope for their happiness save in themselves. That is often why they are so touchy, so insistent on getting their own way, so eager to be known, so anxious for praise, so determined on ruling their surroundings. They clutch at themselves like drowning men clutch at a straw. And as life goes on, they are never at peace, having found nothing at the end of every road but self. But when one begins to seek God and to love others, he of necessity begins to see the inadequacy of himself. He begins to become humble. His hope then is placed in God alone, for he sees no hope in himself. He no longer has to worry about getting his own way. All that matters is that God should get his way. He knows that the less he has to do with the arranging of his own life, the more likely it is that things will turn out always for the best. He is by no means spineless or inert. On the contrary, let him once be certain that God wills something, and he will tackle it with joy and confidence, because he knows his sufficiency is from God and not in himself. He knows life is a partnership based on love. And whether he acts or whether he lets God or even others act, he trusts with unshaken confidence in God, whom he loves above all things. And God never refuses to aid him, because he in turn infinitely loves him. It is all but a return to the simplicity of childhood based upon the realization of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, which has its origin and roots in love. To speak as little. Try this. Father John Doe says, you want to practice something, he says? Then try practicing these virtues. Speak as little of one's own self or affairs as possible, to mind one's own business, to avoid curiosity, not to want to manage other people's affairs, to accept contradiction or justice required, and then only moderately and with simplicity, to pass over the mistakes of others, to cover them up even where prudent, to accept them, to yield to the will of others where neither duty nor charity is involved, to hide one's own ability or talent but to use it, to avoid ostentation. All of these are in the powers of all of us. But one can go further, to accept blame when innocent, to accept insults or injuries, to accept being disliked, not to seek especially to be loved, not to be put out at one's own mistakes, to be kind and gentle even under provocation, to accept correction gladly, to yield in discussion even when right, not to be self-opinionated or self-assertive. And if we fully understand that the perfection of humility is the perfection of loving God, we may even desire to go still further, to rejoice when despised, to thank God when one is humiliated, to be glad of one's lowliness, to be patient with one's own failings, and to meet failure with a ready smile, to even glory in one's own infirmities. Then it is that love is becoming ardent and true and constant. I fail all the time, but my failures glorify my God, because he's God and I'm just a man. Thanks for letting me say it.
Let's thank Tom again. And I'll bring up John with the secretary's report.
Hey, I'm John, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Connor to come up, and he's going to read the recovery statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Connor. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
All right, so 1940-style Big Book sponsorship from Ford to Second Edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I please get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And anyone in need of a sponsor, please raise your hand. Could you guys stand up for me? Yeah. So after the meeting, just come up and we're going to get these guys to God. Cool. So please join us Monday nights. We have our Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. It's at fellowship is at 6:30. Big Book Study starts at 7:15. That's across the street in the other building. It's on the third floor Monday nights. We also have large print Big Books and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday here, starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thanks, guys, and see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. And I'd like to invite everyone again to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank Tom, just line up down the center aisle after we're done. We're going to go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
And see you all next Monday or next Thursday. Good night.
Much stronger man getting on my Oh, when you smile, when you smile, the whole world smiles with you forever. Yes, when you laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.
Blue, blue sky. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred nights. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying. Watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.